is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Daniel Henniger, the deputy editor of the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal, looking at a news item in New York City, a local news item, about the New York City Council moving to change the location of a statue of Thomas Jefferson, a very tall, 7-foot statue of Thomas Jefferson, a man associated with the founding of the United States and also twice elected president of the United States, associated with lots of successes. But in this instance, the city council is moved to move Thomas Jefferson because of his slaveholding. He was a Virginia planter. He was a man who had lots of things to say about slavery, some of it extremely unhappy-making today when you read it. However, Dan, I start in your column where you cite the Harvard professor Annette Gordon Reed, who believes that people who speak of the founders as slaveholders, and there are others to name, George Washington not the least, might be confusing the founding of this country in the late 18th century and the revolt from George III with the Confederacy, the breakaway, those voices from especially the South, but they also were in New York. We know this. They were everywhere, who believed that the Union was no longer useful. Do you measure, Dan, that the city council is making that mistake of putting two periods of American history together as one? Good evening to you.
Hi there, John. Well, most certainly they are making that mistake. The New York City Council is overwhelmingly today controlled by progressives. New York City being a one-party state, it was inevitable that the progressives would gain control of it. And this is the way they think now about matters relating to race and indeed slavery. And what Professor Gordon Reed of Harvard was trying to suggest is that unless we apply more nuance and make some important distinctions between, say, Thomas Jefferson or the founding fathers and the slavery during the Confederacy, her point was that you end up ultimately undermining the crimes and evil of the Confederacy because they were not equal. And she said that you and eventually you end up the left cancels their own point of view about these things because it just becomes impossible to make any real distinction between very serious evil and and mistakes that people may have made in their past.
Thomas Jefferson, twice president, but he was the author of the Declaration of Independence, although it was a committee product, I understand. Recently, reading a new history by Joseph Ellis, a distinguished historian, Benjamin Franklin was part of the committee to write the Declaration, and he said, I never participate when it's going to be edited by a group, and so he walked out of it. Jefferson was willing to enter into it, and I learned from Ellis that Jefferson had slavery much on his mind when he wrote the Declaration of Independence, even to the point of writing a paragraph that was rejected, blaming George III for slavery in America. They took it out because why? Because in order to achieve the independence that eventually proceeded from the conflict, they had to bring along the southern states, chiefly Virginia, the largest colony. And if they had ruled in a fashion that banned slavery or forbid it or reduced it or in any way challenged it, the measure, Dan, from the distinguished historians in the 21st century is they would have remained a colony of Great Britain.
Well, I'm sure that's true. And, you know, that goes to the point of the argument we're having over the founding of the country, brought up, for better or worse, I would say surely for worse, by the now famous New York Times 1619 project, arguing that the country, in fact, started in 1619 with the introduction of slavery to the United States rather than in 1776 with the Declaration of Independence or 1789. You know, as you're suggesting here, John, the American Revolution in 1776 and the years leading up to it, histories like those written by Joseph Ellis make it clear that before the colonists declared independence from Great Britain, it was an extraordinary decision they were making at that time, these young men and young women who were running the colonies. And if they made that decision, it meant war with the United Kingdom. They were betting everything on the independence of their country. And in a situation like that, where you are making the decision to commence a revolution against a country like the United Kingdom, you have only one thing in mind. You better win. And as you're suggesting with the writing of the Declaration of Independence, they understood what the primary goal was ahead of them, and they had to achieve that goal. And they could not get sidetracked into other issues, however important they might have been. They had to make a decision, and they did so. And as Sean Wilentz pointed in his own letter to the New York City Council, the Confederacy ultimately denounced Jefferson's Declaration of Independence as a tissue of lies. What Jefferson and the founders did put in motion a process and ideas such as freedom for all that in time led to the end of slavery, however bloody a civil war was required to get to that point. So this is the kind of nuance that the left and the progressives miss today. They're either not interested or they don't understand history. But the cancel culture just simply makes no distinction. And as some of these professors are pointing out, the left and their cancel culture does run the risk of canceling themselves ultimately.
I tell you, Dan, when I came up against something I couldn't vouchsafe was when I learned that the statue of Ulysses Grant in San Francisco had been toppled. And that was the day I saw that the attacks on the statues were meant to provoke and meant to unseat. They were coming after something else. Whatever it is, I'm not certain yet. However, these statues, Dan, attacking them, you're attacking dead men and bronze, for heaven's sakes. When does it stop, Dan? Do we have a sense of it ebbing? Has it matured to the point of no longer being useful to the turmoil?
I think it might be ebbing. That was one point I made in this column. The decision about Jefferson, his vote last week, was not a vote by the city council, but by the Public Design Commission, which is 11 private citizens. And their vote was to eventually remove Jefferson from the city council, but fine if the city council doesn't want him, but find somewhere else appropriate for Jefferson to stand rather than simply tearing it down like Ulysses Grant or as the statues were torn down in the summer of 2020. And, you know, the head of the design commission said that they had to keep in mind that they were making a precedent. They were in charge of like 699 other pieces of art that she said other people might have reason to challenge, and they have to go about this in some sort of sensible way. Well, however small, I regard that as progress, that people in positions of leadership simply aren't rolling over at this point and throwing away statues that represent some of the most notable Americans that have ever lived in this country. So, yeah, I think it's slightly receding. There are not going to be any big victories in this war, John. There's not going to be any game-ending touchdowns. It's going to be one step at a time. And I think what happened here in New York this past week was a small step forward.
To my understanding, Dan, Tom Jefferson remains where he's always been till now. If people want to go see him before, is that correct, Dan? He's still there?
He's still there in the city council chamber. And that's not a bad idea. Put that on the to-do list. Go down and see him before he heaves off into perhaps a school, a Catholic grade school, perhaps, that would want to have Jefferson inside their midst and build a curriculum around him.
Daniel Henniger, deputy editor of the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal, writing Wonderland. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.